sit a little closer to the days. But.
Okay, let's try this again.
Well, why don't we start by you're giving us your name, Tom, and then telling us how you came to work in the grain industry.
Well, I'm Tom McKinnon. I'm a retired grain trimmer now. For a few years I've been retired. But I went to high school. I graduated from high school, and I worked part of a summer driving a truck for a Nesco Engineering, delivering bathtubs and toilets, etc. At the end of the summer, I wasn't going to university because there was eight in our family and we just couldn't afford it at that time. I was the second oldest and we were trying to look after the younger ones, get them into university. So I ended up grain trimming started grain trimming on the day after Labor Day in 1951. Yeah.
And you were how old at that point?
18.
18.
Yeah.
You'd been born in
1933.
May of 1933, yeah. Like you said earlier.
Yeah, May the 3rd, 33.
And so when you started just after Labor Day, you weren't the first, I understand, in your family to work in this business.
No, my father was a grain trimmer at the time, and my grandfather was one of the original. He wasn't there when they first started grain trimming in 1884. The Foley and Port Arthur Grain Trimmers Association, they formed a sort of a company. It wasn't a company as such at that time. It was just a group of men in the two cities, and they started loading boat, and my grandfather's father-in-law was one of the originals, and he and my grandfather ended up trimming, and then my father, and so I followed in his footsteps.
Were you expecting to do that even though you were working for Nesco in the summer?
No, I didn't have any idea. When I got out of high school, I finished high school that year, and I didn't know what I was going to do, whether I was going to drive a truck, but I started trimming, and I said I'd never had another job after that.
So your father hadn't been talking up your becoming a grain trimmer and getting you set for it and so on?
No, not at all.
But
no, we didn't know what direction we were going at that time. But we lived right behind the co-op dairy in Thunder Bay, or in Port Arthur at the time. And I spent a lot of time working at the dairy at nights and weekends and that, and there was a bakery, Aunt Martha's Bakery, across the street, and I worked there part-time trying to help out the family. Like I say, there was eight of us, and so we didn't know what we were going to do, and I ended up trimming forever, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
I'm sure you did. Well, we'll hear all about that.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the traditions that you heard about, the knowledge of how the business started, your family's involvement, because you will have heard some of that. Was your grandfather still alive?
No, he died the year before I started. He died in 1950.
Oh, but he was alive then for your growing up.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot of it because the trimmers, when navigation closed in the winter, and it was always navigation closed December the 12th because of insurance reasons. The ships had to leave the dock by midnight on December the 12th for many years until, I don't know exactly what year it was. They carried, some of the shipping companies carried their own insurance, so they extended their season after that. But
and so with the closure, what would your grandfather do? Go on holiday?
Most of them worked. A lot of them worked in the bush. My grandfather had a sawing machine for sawing firewood. He had a team of horses. He used to haul this machine around, a great big saw, and cut up firewood and that for people in the winter. And my father, I know, worked in the bush because he had some relatives that worked in the bush also.
Right.
They went out and hauled cut pulpwood and that in the winter. And myself, after I was started working with the trimmers, one of the trimmers' father owned the Folium Ice Company, and a lot of us worked at Boulevard Lake cutting ice. And occasionally we'd go up to Sulicoat and cut ice for the railroad, and they would store this ice in the ice house. There was one in Fort William and one at the corner of Bay Street in Port Arthur, being Cumberland Street. There's a big ice house there, CNR had.
Something that was very important before refrigeration really took over.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it gave us all a job because it was only for a month or 6 weeks or something, but it was pretty intense, hard work.
Yes.
Yeah. But that passed the winter for most of us. And occasionally, when I wasn't working at the ice house or something, I had three young girls for a family, and I was trying to raise them because there wasn't an awful lot of money at the time, so we had to keep going.
Yes.
And I found I worked at the curling club or something, finding different jobs and that. Mm-hmm. We all the termers seemed to find a job of some sort during the winter to fill in the time anyway.
We'll develop the picture further. So that's when you began working in the grain industry in 1951, and you worked there then for 52 years, you were saying. So that makes it 03.
Yeah.
It was 6 years ago when you retired. What was the organization? Like you say, it started as an association.
Yeah, it was an association. It was called, eventually, I don't know what the original one. I had a book that they used to have their meetings with, but I gave it to my nephew, Bradley, a couple of years, well, after I retired. I gave him the book just for history so he could have it.
Yes.
And it was the minute of all their meetings and that.
Is the record of all of the meetings of the association?
Well, not right from the very beginning. I'm from the 1900s.
I see.
The early 1900s.
So the better part of 100 years.
Yes, that's right. There was two boards. This was the original.
Right.
And then, actually, I think, if I'm not mistaken, there's a charter. They formed a union in 1903. Okay. They belonged to the Union International Longshoremen's Association. Mm-hmm. And I think the charter is still hanging on the wall in the trimmer's office and in the chapel building. And the years ever since that, we have never had, or not we, the grain trimmers never had a labor stoppage.
No.
Never had any problem with labor, like as far as going on strike or anything.
Right.
And forever, they never had a problem with that.
With whom did you deal? Did the trimmers deal? With
the shipping companies directly.
With the shipping companies.
Yeah.
You were working on the ships.
Right? Yeah, we had a contract with the shipping companies to load the ships.
Were they organized? Did they have a council or whatever, an organization among themselves, or do you deal with the individual shipping?
No, we dealt with, they had a committee as such, each company. There was, years ago there was only three or four companies, whereas now there's quite a few smaller companies, but like Patterson Steamships and Upper Lake Shipping and Canada Steamship Line and Meisner were the big companies in the around the 50s, have three or four guys we would meet with and refresh the contract net whenever need be. Mm-hmm. So we just dealt with them directly. And actually, you say we'd never really had anything to do with the elevators as such. We'd go to work, we'd walk down the dock and go directly aboard the ship and put the spouts aboard the ship when we were getting there. So we really had no dealings with the elevator companies as such,
How large an organization was it? Well, how large was the union, would you say?
There, at times, there was 200, about over 200 trimmers at one time. I know and this was after the Seaway opened in 1959, we supplied a lot of labor for the Kiefer Terminal for unloading general cargo and that.
Because you were longshoremen after all.
Yeah, yeah. And they formed another union at that time, another local. It wasn't the grain trimmers local. Mm-hmm. It was a longshoremen unloading these salties and that.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. And, let's press on here. Who did you work for during this time? Well, it's the shipping companies. The shipping lines. Mm-hmm. What was the work that you did?
We loaded the ships.
Why don't you expand on that?
Well,
you did mention the directing the grain. And
we put this, like I said, we'd go aboard the ship and put the spouts. At the time when I first started in the 50s, it was all my hand work. And whereas after the Seaway was built, they had to have bigger spouts, longer spouts, higher spouts. They had to raise the spouts up.
Because the ships were bigger.
Because the ships were much larger. Originally, before the Seaway opened, some of the ships would only carry 4,000 ton of metric ton of grain, whereas now they carry 30,000 tons.
Sure.
They would take maybe 9 or 10 times.
Little canalers.
Exactly, yeah. There was
through the Welland Canal.
And the Lachine Canal, they go down through there.
Yes.
There was only 14-foot draft, and there was a lot of traffic between here and Georgian Bay with smaller package freight.
Right.
And between here and Toronto.
Yes.
They would bring like all the groceries and that for Thunder Bay, Port Arthur, and Fort William came by ship.
Yes.
In package freighters. So they would bring this freight up and go back with grain, load the grain. And it was very difficult to load those package freighters. Excuse me.
Yeah, that would be a real challenge.
They had two decks in them, and to try and get the compartments full down below, it was very difficult because there's a vacant space, say, in the cargo holds, and they had to try and get these full.
Yes.
And that's why these wooden shovels, we would be in under the deck, the second deck, below decks we'd call it, and try and shovel this. They were very fussy. They would make you get every corner tight. They were down there checking. And some of the package freighters that just had little holes like that in this tween deck, and you'd have to fill those with the spout or shovel all the grain into these little way back in the farthest corner. So it was very difficult. Like to load some of those package freighters, it would take you 8 or 10 hours to load 4,000 ton.
Sure.
Whereas with the big bulk freighter nowadays, some like Pool 7A, they can load 4,000 ton an hour or something. They could load a big hole in one hour. And they had to raise the spouts eventually after the Seaway opened. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm repeating myself or something.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah. But they'd have to raise these spouts up, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think Patterson Elevator was the first one to pull spouts. Were only 30 or 40 feet from the water level,
mm-hmm.
whereas the high spouts were up about 85, 90 feet
mm-hmm.
to get the outside of this the hole full.
Sure.
Yeah.
This was the elevator down on the camp.
That's
the
right, camp river, right at the bridge there.
Which
yeah.
was being knocked down in 1978 when we moved to town.
Yeah,
kind
that's
of traumatic
right.
to see that because yeah. my father used to mm-hmm. sell all his grain to Patterson, so
yeah. okay.
it flowed
well,
through that elevator
oh, really?
From
yeah.
the farm in Manitoba.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as a farm boy who has moved grain, spread it in a granary, how cool were the ships? How cool was it down there in the hull? Or how hot did it get?
Not really.
It wasn't hot?
No. The worst thing was the dust, of yeah. course.
Terrible yeah. dust, I'm sure.
Yeah. And that's originally why they had wooden shovels in these package freighters, we called them,
yes.
where they sure. had the double decks in them.
Yes.
And even after that, if they had just one hole, sometimes you'd still have to get in there and shove the wooden shovel. If you're using a metal shovel in the cargo hold and you hit the metal beams or something, you would have a spontaneous combustion. You could have an explosion.
And
that's
spark,
apparently
yeah.
that's the story I got anyway, is why they had wooden shovels.
Well, it makes very good sense. It might not do a lot of damage to the ship, I suppose, depending on how big the explosion was, but it certainly could do damage to the person working there,
yeah,
I would imagine, because
right.
I'm imagining the iron steel hull would,
mm-hmm.
well, yeah. explosions are...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, wooden shovel would make good sense.
Yeah.
So it wasn't necessarily sweaty. Of course, the grain was clean. It wasn't full of, didn't have lots of thorns in it.
No, it wasn't very clean.
yeah.
I remember once they used to, I don't know if you're familiar with the screenings, refuse screenings.
Yeah.
It's just like all the scrap on it.
Yes.
We loaded a ship at Pool 6 elevator, which is now gone. We loaded the ship's name was the Inkster, the Walter P. Inkster, I'll never forget it. Took most of these screenings to Duluth, and they made pellets out of them in Duluth.
Yeah.
But it was very hard to ship, get this stuff into the spouts, get it elevated out of the bins and that. And it's one night we were there for 12 hours, and we loaded 4 tons. It was so slow, and it was sometimes just dribble out.
Yeah.
Very slow.
It's light.
Yeah, there's nothing to it. It's just like garbage, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually, I guess the pellets were made here in town at the
exactly the elevators. Quite a few elevators.
In order
made.
To avoid that kind of business.
Yeah, yeah. But then again, and when they built these new spouts, previously before, there were some of the ships were big. Like some CSL had some ships. I remember. In the early 50s, in 1940, the CSL, Canada Steamship Lines, had some bigger ships, like the Lemoyne was, I remember, it was 68 feet wide or something. Well, some of those spouts at the elevators would only reach halfway out to the hold. So we had what we called a box spout. It was a big metal spout, about 30 feet long. It would be about 2 feet wide and a foot high, and we would attach that to the shipping spout off the elevator and put a ladder across the hatches to hold this up, and then we'd have to shovel it from the end of this box spout to the outside of the ship to get the hole filled. Yeah, it was awful. It was a real labor.
Yeah. Nothing very glamorous about this.
No, it really wasn't. It's much better now. Everything is push button.
Yes.
It's all electric.
But it was labor until, the 70s, 80s?
Well, no.
A bit early.
Like I say, after the Seaway opened,
after 50 days,
things improved a lot. Yeah. But some of the elevators were slow, or 10 years or so before they
had the equipment.
Yeah. They weren't getting the business, so I guess they had to. Improve their loading facilities. Right. Yeah.
So a typical day on the job is, did you work at one elevator as a rule, or did you move around?
We moved around. Yeah. Like if a ship, they would only load part of a load because the elevator would only have so much of this one commodity,
right.
Like say two Northern or something at that time. That's what it was called, the Northern. And,
yeah.
The grade of the wheat, and they would have to go to another one. So our gang would follow it generally.
Stay on the ship, actually?
Or no.
Well, or drive over to the...
Yeah, or take it in the early days, of course. They take the streetcar or something. I remember riding the bus. We went on the ship. We didn't have any money at that time, so some of us young guys, we rode the ship over. We got out and was in the full steamship lines. We left Stewart's elevator, that at the time was called. We went out and we were supposed to go to Richardson elevator. Well, because of the weather, we couldn't go. We went out and we anchored, so we spent the night out in the bay, up in the forepeak of the ship and bouncing around up there. And eventually, the next day, he went up, had to go up the Cam River to tie up because the weather was so bad. So we got off the ship. It was pouring rain. We got soaking wet. We ran over and caught the bus across the tracks there off Simpson Street. And we all had our coveralls on and our shovels and that. This bus driver was ready to throw us off, I think. But that was just one of the joys of being a grain trimmer.
Yeah.
But we most of the time we had to follow the ship from one elevator to the other. Yeah.
And the equipment, you just alluded to it, you were wearing coveralls.
Yeah.
Any special footwear? Or?
No, we had to wear safety boots. And
was there any other equipment that you...
Yeah, well, each elevator, they belonged to us. We called them plows after they got these high spouts. Some of them still wouldn't reach the outside of some of these ships because most of the ships now are 78 feet wide, and the spouts wouldn't even reach them. So we had a plow. It's a piece of metal about 3 feet long and 2 feet wide with a couple of wooden handles on them, And we used that to direct the grain to fill up the cargo hold.
Down in the hold.
Yeah. And this was mainly when we got up near the top to trim it off.
Yes.
Just to get it out. Like I say, a lot of time we would put a ladder across the hatch, which some of them were about 20 feet wide. So we'd put a ladder across there. The ladder may be 15 feet, 20 feet away from the edge of the hatch. So we would put the spout or the box, sorry, I've gone blank, the plow. We put the plow on the ladder and it would shoot off this metal to fill it up. And then we'd have to shovel a lot of it too in the last 10 feet or so to get the holes full, because the holes had to be full. And particularly with the flax, which I don't know, you're probably familiar with that.
I'm familiar with flax, the stuff that it is.
Yeah, exactly. And they're very fussy. They always had an inspector come and make sure the holes were really full. They were very concerned about the flax because it was almost like water.
Yeah.
And it would shift around and it would fill in. If you didn't get the one corner of the hatch full, the ship would take a little bit of a list or something, or it's going to stay there. It's not going to go back like water or something. Yeah. It's going to stay where it goes.
Yes.
Yeah.
This would be their own inspector, I suppose.
Well, insurance. Yeah. It was for the ship's insurance.
Right.
Yeah. Because if the ship wasn't properly trimmed, they could be in trouble.
Would an inspector clear the...
close the hatches till the inspector got there. He had to come down. We phoned him ahead of time when we knew or thought the hull was going to be finished. Right. He would come down. Because most ships at that time had six compartments, six cargo holes. And there could have been only two of them full of flax. And the rest could be wheat or oats or barley or whatever. So he would come down and make sure these flax holes were full. That's all he was mainly concerned about.
The six holes would be from side to side in a row, or were there two side by side?
No, there's six in a row.
So it's six
forward to aft.
And was there any method to the way in which they were, to the order in which they were filled?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What kind of order would it take?
Well, it depended on the ship. Every ship was different, because some ships had a wheelhouse and accommodation forward.
Right.
And aft. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to fill, maybe you'd have to fill from number one hole to number five hole, right up or something, mm-hmm. on one with everything, all the accommodation in the after end. Whereas with the accommodation on both ends, you might leave number one hole and number six hole slack, and the middle of the ship would be full. The two, three, four, and five hole would all be full.
Right.
Yeah.
Who gave you the orders on that?
The chief officer.
Of the ship.
We worked under his direction.
He was the...
But they changed crews a lot, so we had a pretty good knowledge of each ship. After years, you know how the ship's going to load. And we could help a lot of the officers, first officers, as far as loading was going.
It would become a question, I suppose. You'd like the ship loaded this way, his confirmation, and then you'd go and do it.
Exactly, yeah. But he was the boss in
of
the
course.
End. Yeah,
yes.
We had to load.
It would be the order in which they were loaded, I suppose.
Yeah.
The extent to which each hold was loaded.
Yeah, and some of the officers, chief officers, were a little difficult at times. You try to help them out, and they think you're trying to overrule them, trying to do their job or something, they wouldn't get along with you too good. But most of them were good.
Yeah.
Like most ships, you would fill number two hole, number five hole right away. There's no problem because you know they're going to fill.
Tie it down.
Yeah. And then again, as the ship got older, some of the bulkheads were pretty crappy. And they would get a big bulge in them. You wonder if they're going to stand up. Okay, once in a while a bulkhead would break too.
Yes. Because you're filling a hole, the next one is empty.
Exactly.
And so it can bulge into it.
Yeah, and that did happen once in a while too. Yeah. Actually, once one of the ships broke in half too when they're unloading it, because They done the same thing down in Montreal. They unloaded a hole at the dock.
Yeah. Yeah. A little excitement at that point.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, somebody had to explain that. Yeah.
How full would the holes be when you, the fullest holes that you...
They'd be right to the top.
Right to the top.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how much clearance? A few inches or... No, or preferably...
They'd be packed. And like, again, some of the officers, the chief officers, they were more particular than others too, whereas some would say, well, that's enough there. And you'd leave it down a few inches, but the hatches, they had steel beams across them, so some of them, if you filled them too full, they couldn't get the hatches on. Yeah. So they'd take the hatches off. You'd have to shovel some of the grain out of the way, or shovel it into the next hole, or they had a booby hatch to get down into the cargo hold for the crew hatch. So we'd have to take some of the grain out of the hatch and put it in this booby hatch so they'd have room to put the hatches on. Yeah, and that happened quite often. In some of the early days, in my early days there anyway, some of the old ships, they had hatches that slid from side to side, from the side of the ship to the middle, mm-hmm. and they would push the grain all into the middle, and you might have a stack of grain in the middle of the hatch, so you'd have to end up shoveling that out, and some of the mates would want them full, and they'd come back every trip, they'd come back 20 times a year, and still do the same thing, make you shovel this grain all the time. I don't know whether to show you they were boss or what it was, but most of them were good.
If you fill the hole to that extent,
you could, like, as far as trimming it, like, yes, leveling yes, it off. Oh yeah, we were in there with the spout running, the grain running out of the spout, and we're there shoveling it in that, or using the plow, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because sometimes we would just get the grain in high enough in the hatch, so you get the plow, and we'd just throw the plow on top of the grain to direct the, because it coming down the spout, say from 90 feet up or something, it had quite a force, and you could shoot some of the grain, some of the spouts would shoot 20, 25 feet.
And everything nature will do, gravity will do for you.
Yeah.
You want to take advantage of, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Was it dangerous in any way?
No.
Flax could be tricky.
Yeah. But other than that, and years ago when we used to load the screenings, they were really bad. And now, I don't know, I'm glad I'm out of the business now, but the last few years they started shipping peas, and they are the dirtiest commodity. I think they were worse than screenings, really dusty. And you had to wear a mask in that, of course, or you wouldn't be able to breathe.
And did you always wear masks from the beginning?
No, when did you? I hardly, myself personally, I hardly ever wore. I didn't like wearing them. The main reason I didn't like wearing them used to fog up my glasses. If I wore a mask, it would get steam in here, and my glass would fog up.
I know the problem.
But a lot of the guys wore masks all the time.
Yes.
Some of them were more sensitive. A couple of the fellas had sort of asthma and that, but they used to wear a mask.
Well, I was thinking that if you're not wearing a mask and breathing in that dust, the lungs must begin to feel it after a while.
Yeah, it was awful stuff. And Canada Malting, they make malt for brewery and whatever. And I don't know what they put in their barley after it's processed. They germinate it and it dries out. I don't know what they're using, but a lot of, and as it turned out, I was foreman at that elevator for quite a few years when I was on the waterfront. And my eyes, you couldn't see for a couple of days. It would just be beet red. I don't know what it was in their commodity, but it just burned my eye. Well, it did everybody. A lot of guys wouldn't even go there. They wouldn't work there. But we never said anything about it because it was our job. But we certainly didn't like doing it.
Have there been health problems for green trimmers? No, any kind of pattern of them?
Not really. Not that I can think of. No.
Life expectancy has been
okay. Well, I don't know. A lot of them, it seems, as soon as they retired, that's what I often wondered. Well, my father, he lived 4 years after he died. And it seemed to me at that time, say 25 years ago, a lot of the fellas after they retired, it seemed they only lived a year or two after. Yeah. But now a lot of the guys are living 15, 20 years after. Yeah. So there doesn't seem to be...
I'm very pleased to hear that, although the other experience you're suggesting from the earlier years would probably be a result of the work.
I would guess so, yeah. Because you were more, in touch with right in like the cargo holds and that. There was a lot of package freighters and they were awful. And when the Seaway first opened, we got a lot of oil tankers here for hauling grain out of here, and they were awful. And a lot of them carried oats at the time, and oats is another bad commodity as far as I'm concerned. And I didn't like oats. That was the worst one I ever ran across as far as loading.
So oats is your... I would think of barley as worst, although you mentioned, of course, the malting barley at Canada Malting.
But no, I found oats was the worst thing because it's a finer dust, I think. Sure. Whereas barley is maybe a little more rich. You get more rich off the barley dust, but the oats seemed to be a finer dust. And on these tankers, you'd have to... Sometimes we would have 30 guys on a tanker loading tankers because there was numerous, I don't know how many hatches they would have. They're just little hatches. Some of them are only big enough for a pipe, an oil pipe in. But we were filling all these, and we were down in the cargo hold I guess it'd be a cargo hold or a tank. It'd probably be called a tank on the oil tankers. But they were really bad, and it took you days to load some of those tankers. Really,
and they were determined to send them back down the lakes with a grain cargo.
Yeah, I don't understand how they got them cleaned up. At that time, I don't know, it didn't phase on me at the time, but now I often wonder how they ever got all that junk out of there to put grain in after hauling oil.
Because you've been in a tanker when it was ready to load, and you've been in the hull, I suppose, and it seemed clean enough to take grain.
Yeah, there was nothing sticky.
And they must have washed it out, and you hate to think of what the washing area was like on the waterfront where they cleaned
those
tankers. Yeah, exactly,
how much pollution is going into Lake Superior when they do clean these. Yeah, yes. And a lot of, for a few years too, there was a lot of... bulk carriers like Salties would come here after bringing sugar or something into Toronto or Hamilton or somewhere, and they've holes in there were really stinky in that too, and sticky. Well, they're like molasses almost.
Yes.
But they got them cleaned up, and they used to run here fairly regular with those ships after unloading the cargo in Toronto or something, come here for grain.
The cargo would have been brought up in liquid or whatever form, viscous form, like petroleum, like oil.
Yeah.
They just filled the thing and then unloaded it, washed it out, and then it came up here in ballast.
Well, and some of the sugar was just raw sugar, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it had been in the hold, not in bags or anything.
No, just bulk sugar.
Sugar.
Yeah. And sticky and that, I don't know. How they loaded that stuff on and got away with it. Because now with some of these ships, they have to be as clean as this kitchen floor. Like Canada Malt, if they send a shipment to, they send quite a bit to Africa, their malt barley. And they clean the hold right out. It's got to be spotless, and they line the whole cargo hold with plastic. A vapor barrier before they load it. They're that fussy about it.
Really?
Whereas years ago they never loaded it in some of those ships.
No.
Yeah.
You developed quite a knowledge of shipping, of ships.
Doing
this job.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was.
You've been in them all.
Hmm?
You've been in all the different kinds of ships that were.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Some of those like when the Seaway first opened, a lot of Liberty ships came here. They were the left over from the war, right?
Transport vessels.
Yeah, and they would come here, and they would go up the Cam River and load and take flour over to Africa or somewhere. And they were, if we weren't loading grain or something at the time, we would go and load flour at night or something. If we were, like if I was trimming, mm-hmm. I'd load grain for 8 or 10 hours and then go over there and load bags of flour during the night. We'd work, they'd work all night. So sometimes I'd go 2 or 3 days without any sleep. Not all myself, a lot of the guys done that just to make some money. Yeah. And it was fairly good money at that time for loading these ships, because it was overtime. We'd always go there because they'd have a crew there during the day loading, and then they'd have to get another gang in at night, so we would go there and we'd get the overtime.
You were all trimmers?
Yeah. Most trimmers are longshoremen. I mean,
the daytime people were in the union as
yeah,
well.
As long they were the longshoremen, and then the grain trimmers and other longshoremen would go. Like I say, sometime we had 250 men working, and from our office we would do all the dispatching for both locals. Mm-hmm. For as far as the grain and the longshoremen, we still do that.
Yes.
Oh, I don't say we. The trimmers still do that. Yeah. Because I was president and manager, general manager of the company for about 19 years, I think.
So that makes it, what, about 84 to
06? 76.
From 76 to?
76, I went in the office. Till I finally got fed up with it, and back in the waterfront just before I retired, just thought I'd try it for a couple more years, and what a difference.
It was a pleasure to be working with the equipment now.
It really was. Yeah, I enjoyed the last few years again, yeah. Because, like I say, everything has changed so much, even in the time that I was in the office.
Yes.
Because of the everything was push button. You'd just go there and grab a box and push a few buttons and move the spout around. You'd done it.
Remote control.
Yeah, exactly. It sure made it a big difference.
At the Lakehead, I don't suppose. This was flour.
No, it came from Robin Hood. They had a storage shed just down the river, the Cam River, from Patterson Elevator on the other side of the river.
Okay.
And occasionally they would send a ship there, but most of the ships there were Canadian, whereas at Shed 7 down by Westland D Elevator, which is no longer there, the International Harvester building there, just up past there, that's where they would send the salties for flour for shipping overseas, whereas from Robin Hood across from Patterson there, that was all for Georgian Bay or somewhere in Toronto, that flour, that was just for Canadian consumption.
It had been grounded in Winnipeg.
Yeah, or somewhere out west.
Key Waiton, perhaps Lake of the Woods.
Exactly, yeah.
Which was what, was it Red Rose there for a time? Well,
I'm not
other
sure.
Detail.
I'm not sure, yeah.
I was thinking about flour milling and saying to myself, there never was any significant flour milling down here at the lake. Business which avoided the Welland Canal, it was, as you were saying earlier, very significant. Grain was shipped from here to Depot Harbor, the once upon a time near Parry Sound. But then, of course, there were the other places. Port McNichol was
Midland,
Sepia, Midland, Parry, and so on.
Collingwood
and Owen Sound, perhaps. I mean, there are elevators still to be seen in both Collingwood and Owen Sound.
And there's a few
enjoying them last summer.
Around the Welland Canal.
One of the flour mills built in the first years of the century was at the Welland Canal mouth, as I remember. Flour milling industry 100 years ago. Some of these things stick in my memory.
And there's, I don't know, I'm trying to think of some places. Well, they would take some of the rapeseed, and that goes now to Windsor for oil seeds.
For processing down there.
And Thorold, there was an elevator in Thorold, Ontario.
Right.
They used to go there pretty regular. And there's one elevator at Port Colborne, which was a like a transfer elevator, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, Port Colborne, in fact, was where the elevator was built at that, or the mill, rather, the flour mill was put up at that time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, back to the office. You went into the office, you said, in 1976.
76.
Yeah. As the president of the local?
Yeah, of the company. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the company. When the Seaway opened, we formed a company, a limited company. We had to, because we, when the Salties started coming here, we started working for Stevedoring Contractors in Montreal. So because of liability and insurance, etc., at that time. So in 1959, we formed a company, and we changed the name from Fulton Rupert Arthur Grain Termers to Thunder Bay Grain Termers Limited. We formed a limited company at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were a company in dealing with the organization in Montreal.
Yeah.
And your members were also members of a union.
Yes, some of them were. Not all of them. Not all. Because we had, every elevator, we had one foreman, and he was not in the company.
Okay.
He was, he was not in the union.
Right,
he'd be the company boss, or company rep, whatever you call him.
That must have been a fine art, because the company, the incorporated company, employing the foreman, and then the members of the guys doing the work, they'd all been grain trimmers previously,
unique.
Were now.
Yeah.
But the union didn't negotiate with the company.
Yeah.
Or did it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so the company, rather than the union, now began dealing with the shop, you'd be paid.
Yeah, that's right. Essentially, you would say that,
So I get the sense that you weren't getting rich doing this, so the negotiations... No. And on the other hand, there was never a stoppage. You never went on strike.
No, never, no. We always got along with them, And we found them fair to deal with as far as that goes,
So you were, of course, compared to the ship and the investment of the ship, here were... How many men would be loading? How many trimmers would there be on a ship as a rule?
Well,
proportional to the size, I suppose.
Yeah. And the elevator.
Yeah, the elevator.
The elevator had a bearing on, like some elevator, like you go to P&H or Cannon Walt, they had one spout.
Sure.
So you maybe need four or five guys if there's not too much trimming, depending on the ship again, too.
Yes.
Yeah. And you go to Pool 7 or years ago, Pool 4, before it was demolished or shut down, whatever, they had seven spouts, so... We might have had 20 guys, five guys maybe.
So it's sort of maybe a very rough ratio, maybe in the big elevators, three per spout would be sort of the ratio or something like that.
If three
there was
to
a
four.
Single, you'd have four or five.
Yeah,
I'm sure you had enough.
You had one guy. There's a couple of elevators, everything is completely automatic, like Richardson. Mm-hmm. They control the spout up and down, in and out, and sideways. And they control the flow of grain out of it too with the button, whereas most of the other elevators, they control the flow of the grain with ropes. They shut them off.
Yes.
So you'd need another guy there to control these shipping lines, we'd call them,
mm-hmm.
And there'd be one guy running the spout up and down. And then you'd need, some don't have the spout going sideways, so you'd have one trimmer on each side of the spout, directing the spout from one side of the hatch to the other to get it full. So it had a bearing on the elevator. Years ago when the Seaway first started, after that there was a lot of ships, the Salties had to be trimmed with the machine. We would lower a machine into the cargo hold, and put the grain spout, right into this trimming machine, and they would shoot the grain, say the trimming machine. It stood about 8 feet high, and it had an endless belt on it. A short belt would throw the grain. Well, it would throw the grain up into the corner of the hole 30 or 40 feet, to get that compartment full. So sure. you would just spray this grain around
right.
with the machine, the trimming yeah. machine. But eventually they done away with them because all the ships now are bulk carriers. Mm-hmm. The hatches are pretty well wide open. They may need a little trimming, or you may have to use the plow to get some of the compartments full. That's just what it is, yeah. And some of the ships are built now, the cargo holds have a slope side, whereas others, they go flat, and just like a ceiling. So the hatch is here in the middle.
Yes.
You got to get these corners full, yeah.
Who produced the machine that you were mentioning?
Well, they came from Montreal originally.
I see.
Yeah, and we bought them... We had half a dozen at one time, but I don't think they've used one for years now.
In fact, there's probably one or two of them sitting around in the junkyard in Milliby.
Yeah, they're probably at the Kiefer, I would say, because one of the Steve at the Lakehead Shipping have an office there.
Sure.
And I think...
Bill Brim, eh?
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly, yeah. And Canadian Grain Trimmers. I don't know who's manager there now. John Kemp was manager there at Vasso. Somebody is there now. Yeah.
When we build the museum, we'll want one of those.
Yeah. Get a plow and
Get a wooden shovel.
A wooden shovel. Yeah, those plow are hard to get. Those wooden shovels.
I bet they're not giving away lightly.
No, that's for sure. I don't know.
A beautiful artifact.
Yeah, yeah. There's not. I don't know. There'll be a few around still. Not too many though. Yeah.
So the organization, as president, what kind of assistance did you have in the office?
I just had a secretary.
A secretary?
Yeah, and bookkeeper.
The one woman in the organization?
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, we had a man.
Or did you have a man?
When I started there, he was a stout member of St. Paul's Church. Well, you know Lorraine Marrier.
Oh, yes.
His father.
Oh, his father.
Ambrose was the bookkeeper for years. Yeah, yeah.
And secretary and so on.
Yeah, he was there when I started, Lorraine's father. Yeah. And there was a couple of the other trimmers who were... Yeah, they were trimmers. And, well, I don't know, Al, as far as I was concerned, was the best Christian I ever met.
One of God's saints for sure. No question about it.
Yeah, it really was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Splendid.
Yeah.
An elder, when the elders were gone, El was still at work.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Very impressive that.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I enjoyed my time in the office there. Yeah. But after...
Comes a time when you want to be out in the fresh air again.
Yeah, exactly. Like I say, I was getting tired, ready to retire. And... It wasn't as hectic as, I can't remember what year it was, but we shipped a lot of grain some years, and we would load 60, 65 ships every 2 weeks, eh?
Sure.
And that was a lot of grain, a lot of shipment, whereas now something might get 10 or 12 ships every 2 weeks, get one a day if they're lucky sometimes.
Yeah. One could weep over the decline of the grain trade.
It's awful, it really
is. What would you say about the esprit de corps? I'm thinking there wasn't a lot of glamour about it, but men can be proud of what they're doing. Was there that kind of feeling in the local?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I think we are well respected and thought of by the elevators. We got along really good because we had to go to every different elevator, and you're dealing with a different foreman or a different superintendent. And then you go on a ship and you get different kinds of people running the ships, like the chief officers who we dealt with mostly, and occasionally you would get a captain in there that would want to have his say too. So we had to deal with them too. And we seemed to get along with everybody. We never had any hard feelings, I don't think, as far as I know anyway.
This suggests a combination of abilities. Obviously, knowledge of ships, the skill, and all the effort, the muscle work that went into ability to work with them. And
I don't know what to say, but
Was there a social life to the organization?
Not in the early years there was. We'd all go to the Waverly Hotel or the Alexander in Westport and drink their beer or something.
Sure.
Yeah.
It was a watering hole, the Waverly
exactly.
on the Port Arthur where the guys would meet.
Yeah. It was a bit of a problem years ago, in the early years when I first started trimming. It really annoyed me as far as their drinking and that. I can't believe to this day that nobody was ever injured because of not only us, but the ship's crews too sometimes. You'd get some of our guys would get mixed up with the mate or some of the crew and that would have a good time and you wonder why nobody ever died. He got in, and he was a real Christian. He wouldn't have a drink to save his soul. And he got killed in the job. He fell down the cargo hold and got killed. And that's the only fella I know that was ever injured on the job.
Sober and dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Tragic.
Yeah. And actually his daughter was, and again, a member of St. Paul's Church, Jean Chismar.
Oh, yes, I've heard the name many
times. Yeah, she was really involved in the church. But, no, I don't know, things were...
We've heard a fair amount about alcohol by now.
Yeah.
So if you were to tell us that a lot of the guys went in with bottles in their back pockets, we wouldn't be surprised.
Or did they not? They did years ago.
They did?
But after I got in the office, I don't know whether I can be proud or not, but I certainly seldom, I don't know if anybody ever has a drink on the waterfront now.
No.
I know the elevators themselves have cut back.
Sure.
You can't dare have a drink or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a,
oh,
in those earlier decades.
It was a problem, for sure, definitely, yeah. But not now.
No, like no, it's the earlier years we're thinking of. It appears to have been pretty general in a lot of workplaces.
And the
Rivers weren't immune from that temptation.
Oh, no, it was a real problem years ago, yeah. Like in the 40s, Ned, I remember my father, and not only him, but I mean, they'd have their beer and that, and it used to annoy me. I never have a drink myself, well, maybe one a year or something,
sure.
And it just bothered me to all end that these guys were drinking and that. So,
and this was on the job,
yeah,
too.
Yes, and after, like...
And afterwards.
The elevators used to shut down at 5 o'clock for an hour and a half for supper.
Yeah.
And it was a problem. And after they went on, the elevators went on shift work and that, so they carried it right on through, so that kind of done away with all this crap anyway.
Sure.
As far as I was concerned. Yeah. But I really laid down the law when I was in the office and I took over as president of the company and told them there's no drinking on the job.
The members respected that to the best of your knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like I say, right now it's not a problem, but it was public knowledge, I think, that the trimmers were a bunch of bad actors at one time.
Well, they had a lot of company from what we've heard from other workplaces. So
the elevator guys, too, and the shipping guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Port Arthur Shipyard.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't have much to do with the shipyard.
Well, we've had an interviewer, too.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
So I think we can assure you.
Okay.
There was an awful lot of it.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, despite that, it was a safe place. Well, you mentioned one gentleman.
That's the only tragedy I remember there, yeah.
So it had to be careful around a ship. There are lots of ways of getting hurt or killed around a ship,
exactly.
I would imagine.
Yeah, it just amazes me all these years that nobody really did get hurt there. There was a few accidents, nothing really major, though.
No.
Because you take... like even in the fall, years ago, when navigation closed on December the 12th, the ship had to leave the dock by midnight. Well, what they'd done, I remember a couple of times, on the 12th of December at midnight, the crew would come out and take the lines off the dock and throw them on the ship, and the ship wasn't tied to the dock anymore, and we were still loading the ship. So he was still covered with where, and the ice would hold the ship against the dock or something. Otherwise,
because there was ice already.
Forward. Oh yeah, yeah. Most times there would be ice. Yeah.
So they managed to stretch that season to Christmas, New Year's into January for some winters, haven't they? Recently.
Oh yeah,
impressed at how late.
Pretty general now to run into January a couple of days.
Well, what would you like people to know about the work that you did, Tom, which you've been describing? In very interesting detail, I must say. It's really given us a great picture.
I don't know. All I can say is I enjoyed my time trimming. I wish I was still there.
It was an important job to be doing.
Yeah, I felt we accomplished something, As far as our getting along with the elevators and shipping crew, we had to get along with different people and government inspectors and that. We'd have to get along with everybody, and I think we generally did.
Did the government inspectors have anything to do with the ship?
Oh, yeah. They had to pass the ship for the cleanliness.
Okay, at the beginning.
Yeah.
Or before loading.
They would send an inspector up on the ship. He would check, make sure the cargo holds are dry. They would always have to write a report before we started loading, and they would write on the report, ECD, empty, clean, and dry, before we started loading. And occasionally, there was a few different ships. They might have, there was a couple of ships I remember in particular had a small cargo hold. And they would carry ballast in it. So some of these grain inspectors were pretty fussy, and they would say, well, you can't start loading. You got to have a certificate to start loading with this ballast in there. So, but in the end, they came around, and things worked out fine. Yeah.
What did the ships usually use for ballast?
Just water.
Filled with water?
Yeah. And I don't know, with bringing some of this stuff into the lakes now, it bothers me.
Sure. Yeah. Zebra mussels and other things.
Exactly,
come in that way, haven't they?
Yeah.
What might interest or surprise people most about the work that you did? The fact that it wasn't sweaty and hot. It surprises me, because I've been in granaries. I've been leveling grain in granaries in my youth, where it was sticky and hot.
Well, it can be in the summer, of course, and then in the winter, and you're loading in all kinds of weather conditions. And there again, it's up to, at one time, it was up to the grain inspector to say whether you could load in different weather, if it was snowing or raining or something. They could come out and stop the loading.
Sure.
And then they tried to push the buck onto somebody else and say, well, it's up to the captain. If he wants to load in this, he's responsible for the cargo. So we never really knew where we stood as far as loading in bad weather, and which is very common. And especially on salty, if they would, excuse me, if they were loading and if a snowflake come down or something, they would immediately shut off, and they would just freak out sometimes. Some of these captains, if a snowflake came along, they would want to close the hatch up when the spout is still running. They wouldn't even let you get the spout out of the hatch. And they were just crazy, some of them. It just drove you nuts.
Been out of the tropics, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And even some of the Lakers, they would want to stop loading, but some of the captains, I don't think, knew, or the chief mates knew where they stood as far as whose responsibility it is to stop the loading. Mm-hmm. And whereas some elevators, like Canada Malt, were very fussy, I must say that about them, because their cargo was so valuable.
Yes.
And it was bone dry, so they couldn't have any moisture at all in it. And they always kept a good eye on the weather. They were very sure what they were doing there. But some of these other elevators, they would They would get mad if you shut off the loading or something.
Yes.
Yeah, but it all worked out in the end, I think, yeah.
Because, of course, the elevator people, just to lumping them all together, are interested in getting as much grain as they can out of their silos or whatever into the ship,
yeah,
as fast as they can.
And that's right.
Anyone gets in the way of that stuff moving through, they're going to be somewhat unhappy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And the ships, too, they'd like to get going, so they'd want to complete the loading if they could.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, so because they're even more so now than they were years ago. Some of them were pretty lenient. They were... They wouldn't care if they spent another night in town or something, but whereas now, I guess they're really under the gun. They get going, keep going all the time. That's where a lot of the elevators now are working 24 hours a day.
Sure.
Whereas years ago, they wouldn't work past midnight. There's no way they would work past midnight, but now that's fairly common for them to work 24 hours a day. 7 days a week.
Do you have a knowledge of priorities at the docks? Someone has suggested to us that the salty, or the domestic ships got in immediately, and the salties tended to have to wait a day or two. From his observations, what do you know about that?
Well, some of these salties are chartered too, eh? Well, they're all chartered, and some of them are on a time charter, and some of them are on a voyage charter. Like, if somebody charters them, well, you go to Thunder Bay and get a load of flax or whatever on October the 14th. Well, if the ship arrives here on October the 12th or October the 10th, he might have to sit in the harbor for 3 or 4 days.
Right.
When the cargo may not be here.
No.
That happens quite often. Very, and a lot of times they'll even start loading a ship when the cargo is not all here. And generally they have to go to 2 or 3 elevators.
Sure.
It's very uncommon if they don't go to 3 elevators for a load to get their cargo. So if they're, say, 2/3 of the cargo is here, he might load for a couple of days and then go out to anchor, waiting for the rest of the cargo to come in at the other elevator.
Right.
Yeah, and that's very common.
And I suppose it would be unfortunate if he arrived late.
Yeah.
So they'd sooner arrive early than to be late.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, if he's on a time charter, he's got to be here on the 14th of October or something. And if he doesn't show up, like you say, they can probably... assessment fine or something.
Yes, I dare say.
Yeah.
Whereas the domestic vessels, the whatever we want to call them, the ones that are running
the Lakers, rain,
Lakers, yes,
yeah,
as against the Salties, right?
Yeah.
The Lakers would. Did you have a sense of who were they working for in terms of the contracts for the grain movement? Because the obviously the terminal elevators belong to Saskpool or Richardson's or whoever.
Yeah.
They're working under the wheat board,
yeah,
which has acquired the grain, hasn't it, from the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you have a sense of whose it is?
No, I never worried about that part of it, Ernie.
You just saw the stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. It's, you get some of these ships agents and that on the Salties, and you don't know who they're working for.
Well, no.
Like Willie Rib. So I really don't know, and that really didn't bother me. I didn't get into that end of the business too much.
No.
Yeah. So
you were involved in making sure the stuff
moved. And we just wanted to get the ships in here and get them loaded and get them out.
Yes.
That was our main concern. We just tried to provide a good service, which I think we did, and still do, as far as I know. Yeah.
Are there any surprises at all of this, you think, for people who have... I don't know whether you've served up some surprises for us this afternoon. I think there has been a surprise or two in here, but anything else come to mind?
No, I can't think, but when you go out the door, I'll probably think of
something. Well, give us a telephone call.
No, I can't think of anything else.
What are you most proud of about the work that you did overall over those 52 years?
I don't know. I think we improved our service and our, I don't know, I don't know how to word it, as far as saying we made a better or done a better job or doing a better job than when I started. I'm not taking credit for this myself by any means.
So we'll talk about changes in a few moments because there's interesting stuff in there in terms of how it's developed.
I don't know how to word it.
I suppose if I were to ask you sort of a parallel question, do you think that the work you did contributed to Canada's success as an international grain trader? I dare say the answer would be yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say so.
You kept the stuff moving.
Yeah. We, like I say, we tried to provide a good service, and I think we do, or we did, or still do, as far as I know.
Didn't do.
Yeah. I'm kind of at a loss for words right now.
Well, let's think about, you've suggested some of the changes already, and let's just talk about those a little more.
Yeah.
When you, when the work initially developed, wooden shovel in hand, the grain trimmer went to work and moved the grain. And there was a time, I suppose, even before spouts were established, there was a time when wheelbarrows were used. Going way back.
Yeah, that's
by
right.
By the time you started, of course, the spouts were there, and you mentioned the size of the ships as a factor, the growing and width of the ship. And
I think probably the biggest change I can see is putting the new equipment the elevators have installed as far as loading. It's really made it much easier and much quicker, of course.
Did Richardson's lead in that on the water?
Patterson was the first one to put the high spout, as far as I can remember. I think they were the first one with the high spout. We called them high spouts, which was a blessing to us, because some of those old spout, like I remember particularly McCabe's elevator, which is now UGGM, and it's shut down now too. But they had seven spouts there, and they had these little winches on the dock. They were about that big with the little gear on them. Well, it would take you half an hour or something to crank all these spouts up to get them aboard the ship. Because the ships were out of ballast, they took the ballast out, and the spouts had to go way up in the air. And now you just push a button, and the spout goes on the ship.
Sure.
That's the biggest improvement I can see over the years that I was there.
Yeah. So if Patterson led, Richardson's were there. Were the pool elevator companies slower then in making these changes?
A little bit. But folks, a year there for a while. But now they're all, even P&H, which is a small elevator, and they don't ship very fast. I forget what they ship, about 1,000 ton an hour or something. But, maybe a little more than that. 1,000 ton an hour they ship. But their spout is as good as any of them now.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's one of the remaining elevators still operating, because when I started, there was 28 elevators operating in 1950, and now I believe there's only 8 of them operating now, which has made a heck of a difference. And now you don't think that's going to change. I don't think it's going to improve any by the look of things anyway.
No, surely will not.
Yeah.
Sad to say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's too bad.
So this technological change, you noted the importance of the sea. When the packaged freight business was phased out in the early 70s, I believe that's when it happened. CSL stopped doing that business.
That's right. When
the ships were gone, I suppose.
Once the Keyford opened, they operated a few years after that. Well, actually, I got a thing here. When the Keyford opened, when was it? 1962.
62.
Yeah. But CSL were still operating there. They built that Keyford terminal that's essentially for the CSL, I think, because they had loading ramps and that would accommodate these package freighters, their newer type package freighters. they were much bigger than the original package freighters.
It's ironic that it was 3 years after the seaway was completed that the terminal was built to handle cargo.
Yeah.
The being ready. And then, of course, from 63 to 71 or 2, which is, I think, about the time that there was a big strike, I understand. I happened to be down at the Italian Hall, as it happens.
Is that right?
About the early 90s, about 20 years later, a little bit more.
Yeah.
It may have been the mid-90s. And Paul Martin was up here to address a liberal gathering.
Really, yeah.
And the guys who lost their jobs after that strike when they shut down the package freight business were gathered in the parking lot to demonstrate. Still an awful lot of bitterness about what CSL, which they were blaming that on Paul Martin now. Yeah. Oh, yes. This package made history. It was part of the first package freight cargo to traverse the St. Lawrence Seaway, April 1959, in the SS Saskatoon, Canada Steamship Lines, owned and operated by Canada Steamship Lines package freight business. Low Brothers Paints.
No, I just stuck it on that cardboard.
Oh, I see. That's
I took it off one of the packages on that because we loaded grain on that ship after there at the right time
to grab a souvenir.
I ended up loading that ship with grain after.
So you mentioned the trimming machine that you got from Montreal and used for a time, particularly for loading the salties.
That's all it was for, salties.
That just about the changes in spouts and then the use of the trimming machine? Was that about the extent of mechanization for the trimming work itself?
Yeah, I would say so. There wasn't much else they could change.
Although I guess when a hull is completely open, you can, the deck just opens, then you can fill it quite easily from side to side, and that would be a very significant change as well.
Yeah, see, there's one there. There's a hatch there.
Right.
Okay.
This copy of the Canada Sailings, the 07 issue of Transportation and Trade Logistics, with an article on the McKinnons, the grain trimmers of Thunder Bay. Fine picture, fifth generation grain trimmers, Mike and Brad. Yeah. The picture here of an open hull demonstrates the much greater ease that the trimmers would have in filling that kind of hold.
Oh, yeah.
They should all be like that.
Yeah, really, that's right.
Yeah, very interesting.
There's another picture there. That's one of the old Lakers years ago.
Oh, yeah. See,
with the wooden hatches there.
Right.
And that was a difficult ship to load, too. That's my father on there, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So in the front here,
this one here, that's
my
father.
That's your father.
Yeah.
Now, that does take it back, then. He'd be, what, 20-ish at the time? So that's early in the century.
I would say that was in the 40s, 1940.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I would guess that would be in the
1940s. So he had a youthful look to him for some time. Right, the arts.
Yeah, he never had a gray hair on his head the day he died.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe McKinnon.
Yeah.
No date.
No, I would get that ship many times, too, after that, yeah.
The changes that we've described have all made the work easier, the loading of a ship much more efficient.
Yeah.
You've suggested very long, it could take 10 or 12 hours to load some ships.
At least.
Or longer than that.
Yeah. Like, most of the ships now that come here, I would say the majority of them carry about 30,000 tons, metric tons, so... If most of them would take 2 days to load, most of them
at 30,000 tons.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whereas as Pool 7A, they could load a ship in 8 or 10 hours. They're about the only elevator that has that output capacity.
Right. They could load a 30,000
in an 8 or 10 hour shift if they had to. They could.
That's really moving.
If the grain was available and everything, but that would be. Not very common.
So very often it was a matter of moving from elevator.
Majority of the time. Majority. Yeah.
There just wasn't enough cargo at any one place to get...
Yeah. And like I say, I don't know what all goes on in the background as far as placing these orders at different elevators and who owns the grain at each elevator.
Right.
Yeah, that never got into my brain. That,
you didn't have to worry about the kind of grain, the quality of the grain.
No.
Someone else was making those decisions. Stuff comes down the chute and your task is to distribute it.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Besides dealing with, and obviously these changes would make the job, the work easier.
Oh, for sure.
And make the movement much faster.
Exactly.
Yeah, save money.
That's the biggest part of it, I think. And it's the speed. It speeded up the loading.
Sure.
Yeah, because years ago when they had to use the, instead of getting a 1,000 ton an hour, you maybe get 100 ton an hour.
Yeah.
So that makes a big bearing on the loading.
Do you have any kind of sense of what the cost per ton might be of the trimming work?
No.
Those kind of calculations were just never made. Eh?
No, I couldn't even guess. No.
I just wondered. Were there any kinds of numbers that you did worry about, or was it just...
No,
making sure the job got done.
That's all we were concerned with. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
We tried to provide a good service to the ships.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think we did. Yeah.
Besides dealing with change, were there challenges that you faced on the job?
No, not really. No. I think the worst challenge was that most of the time was the weather. Really bothered you sometimes, especially in the fall. If you're out there loading and 40 bucks, that's still a problem, I would say.
Yeah. How much of the time loading a ship would you be on deck, as against being down in the hull or down in the hold? Or were you
90% you'd be on, at least 90% now. Right. Yeah. Yeah, there's very little that you go down in the hole anymore.
There used to be more in the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was a time when you'd be down in the hold...
half the time.
Half the time.
Half a day or something, you could be down there, yeah.
Yeah. And, that's a very good question. How did one actually become a grain trimmer? Who did the work?
Well... If we
were were all of you?
Well, friends, relatives. It was a kind of a family affair for years, in previous years, but not so anymore.
And what family was it?
It ended up I hired you. Well, maybe a couple of years later you would want your son to come and grain trim or something.
Yeah.
Well, we would work them in part-time and that. Mm-hmm. And... eventually it would end up being a trimmer, but it's not as family oriented as it used to be.
No, well, we're thinking of the earlier the development of it. You mentioned a number of them being at St. Paul's United, mm-hmm. the Presbyterian church that it was in years past.
Yeah.
You weren't all Irish or Scots Presbyterians.
There was a lot of Scotch.
There was a lot of Scots.
Yeah, and the elevators too, like United Grain Growers, there was... The printer all Scotsman worked there, as it turned out.
Right.
But no. Actually, like my grandfather's father-in-law, they were German descent. They were the Hyders.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
H-E-Y-D-E-R?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jim Hyders connection.
Too far.
He's also been in spiritual care at the. At the hospital. I know Jim. So
I don't know her. Doesn't sound familiar to me. No.
That's right.
Yeah. But no, it's just the luck of the draw if you want to be a grain trimmer. You might start out working at the Kiefer or something nowadays, but there's not as much work at the Kiefer now as there was years ago either.
That's the problem with so much of the waterfront. There's so much less than there used to be.
Yeah.
But, were there Ukrainians or Italians in the grain trimming?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't all Anglo-Celtic.
No, not by any means, no. But there was a lot of, like, my family, there was, ended up five, my uncle worked, and my My grandfather's two brothers were trimmers in that at one time, yeah. But not anymore. They're all like years ago. When the Kiefers first followed doing that, because some of them were kind of part-time farmers and that, and they would come in and work in the city here, and then in the winter they didn't have anything to do, so they'd go back out there. But now there's quite a few of them. The regular trimmers are from the outskirts, mm-hmm. so there's not really a connection to any particular family as such. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, major challenges faced over the years have changes in the industry impacted you, other than the brute fact of there's a lot of grain moving, you have a lot of work to do. If there's not much grain, there's less work. Have other changes impacted?
No, that's not really. It's just the only changes is this mechanical business end of aspect of it.
Sure.
Yeah, I think that has really made a big change. It's far
faster and so on.
More enticing to be a grain trimmer now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. I got the sense early in this narration of yours that your father wasn't particularly pushing you towards it.
Not at all.
No.
No, like I say, when I went to high school, I didn't know what I was going to end up with. I kind of knew for sure I wasn't going to be going to university because of our financial situation. Because there was, like I say, there was eight of us in our family, and I was the second oldest, so I knew I wasn't going
to. I'm the first of eight, so.
Are you?
But lucky, nine years later to get to university.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Your younger brothers and sisters, they got to the university?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My young brother, Brian, I guess you know Brian, that's my young brother.
Oh, was Brian your...
Yeah.
Well, we both know Brian. Brian's your brother.
Yeah.
I see it. What about other brothers then?
He's the youngest brother tonight.
Dealing with the St. John, Sir John A. McDonald.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Would I know others of your family?
Well, Donnie, my other brother, was trimmer. He just retired this year. No, I have a brother in BC and one in Calgary.
Oh, yeah.
And
they escaped to the West.
Yeah, they? And Donnie and Brian here.
Right.
And I have three sisters, but you wouldn't know them.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, there are some questions about significant events. What are your most vivid memories, other than freezing on the deck, wet through and so on?
Yeah.
Although you might want to expand on that one.
No. I don't know.
Any particular, you've mentioned a few ships, styles of ships along the way. Are there any particular loading experiences that stand out in your mind?
A particular salty, and it turned out a Canada malt. And it was a double decker, it was a salty, and we were using machines to trim it. And we were loading the tween deck before there's any cargo in the lower deck, which was against my wishes at the beginning of that. And it had little bulkhead, like compartments, feeder, they called them feeder bins in the tween deck. So you fill these corners and it would run down into the lower deck after the lower deck is full. But we were loading this one and we loaded the tween deck first, two holes. It was a five-hole ship, and we loaded number two and five-hole in the tween decks, and it had a bunch of cargo on the deck. It was just scrap wood and that they had used for dunnage for their general cargo they had brought over from overseas. And after we finished loading it, the ship left the dock to go to Richardson Elevators, it turns out again, Richardson. But the ship took an awful list, and all this cargo, this dunnage and that, all went over onto the dock and that. And we thought the ship was going to upset right at the dock.
Because it was top heavy.
Yeah, exactly. And it scared the daylights out of us.
Were you on board?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I see. Yeah. And we had a trimming machine on there, and they're fairly heavy. They weigh a couple of tons because they're all solid steel with a big 50-horse motor on them. But they got the ship upright again. I don't know. They put ballast back into it to upright it. But I thought for sure that ship was going to sink at the dock. Scared the daylights out of us.
Was this a this was a salty?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it was the captain? Yeah. The captain obviously didn't know his ship very well.
Well,
or the chief officer.
Yeah, that's right. I couldn't understand why the port warden would approve something like this to let it load like that. And the biggest thing I feel was a safety feature.
Sure.
I thought it was very dangerous because they put these hatch covers on the hole, and they can just break through if you get enough weight on them. It's just wooden hatch covers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like in the picture, that picture there, I see these, they would be just wooden boards.
Yes.
Covering the lower deck.
Yeah.
And that was scary. And that's about the most frightening thing I think I saw in all the years.
I certainly understand that. It would be you could watch it with equanimity if you were on the dock, but if you're on the deck, it becomes much more
exactly
exciting. Another question. Obviously, these are sort of kind of fishing questions that we've got in here to see what we can pull out of your memory. What were the most important events that happened in the workplace during your career? Anything to add to what you've told us?
No, I can't think of anything else. I can not right at the moment. Like I say, when you walk out the door, I'll think of something guaranteed.
Well, if you think of a lot, we'll be back. Do you feel it's important to preserve, to share Thunder Bay's grain trade history?
Oh, certainly.
Are we doing something good this afternoon?
Yes, I would say so. Yeah, I really do.
Yeah. And if we could hang on to the artifacts as well.
Yeah.
If we could have saved Pool 6.
Yeah, right.
Made that a center of a museum.
Yeah.
Are there any aspects of the history that we should concentrate on preserving? To your mind? Obviously, we're beginning to get the grain trimmers here, and we hope to talk to one or two more for sure to add additional insights.
I was going to say, have you talked, or are you going to talk to Gene Onchalenko?
We haven't yet. Gene's on our list.
Yeah.
Did Gene work in the industry?
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay, I need to give him a call.
Yeah, and, I would talk to Gene. He's very knowledgeable.
He is, because he's done a lot of research. He's been interested in doing
that. Yeah, and if as far as shipping goes, he knows every ship that ever sailed the Great Lakes on it.
Yes, I bet he does.
Yeah.
Well, we'll
get to him soon. He worked at the elevator previously.
Sure.
He worked with the old Pool 9 elevator, Alberta Pool 9.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get in touch with
him. Yeah, I would recommend that you talk to him anyway. Sure.
And you may have an additional thought or two after we finish, but are there any questions that we might have asked that you'd love to answer?
I can't think of any. Not right now.
The questionnaire's been working then.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's the question of memorabilia, and you've mentioned that there are things that you've shown us a few very interesting things,
And
you have additional things that you could dig out if you had the time.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I mean, I just thought of it. I honestly, I've been so busy this week doing
I've hardly given you any time. You had my call on Monday, I think.
Yeah.
I dropped the letter off on Tuesday, and here it is Friday afternoon, so it's been mighty tight.
The time just goes, I say. I've had several doctor appointments this week. There's no end to it. I don't know.
Well, I trust they're turning out well.
Yeah, so far so good anyway.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I think we might thank you for what you've given us, Tom. This has been terrific. We could talk about other persons in addition to the one or two you've named already after we finish. But thanks very much for introducing us to grain trimming.
Well, I don't know how helpful I've been.
Oh, very helpful indeed.
Yeah.